A reading from Lamentations. Chapter 3, verses 22 through 26. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
The Babylonian captivity is what we hear most about in the history of the Hebrew people, but it was preceded, of course, by a conquest. The Babylonian army in the early 6th century BCE swept in and conquered Jerusalem and the surrounding territory of Judah. It was a devastating event for the Jews and their homeland. The book of Lamentations emerges from the ruins of that experience, a litany of destruction, a requiem of things lost. In the Hebrew version of the Old Testament, Lamentations is titled Echa, which means how? How? The whole book, 6 entire chapters, is asking that question. How did this happen? How can this be? How will we endure this? How? Were you to open your Bible to the book of Lamentations, close your eyes and drop your finger anywhere on its pages, the odds will heavily favor your landing on one version or another of that anguishing question, how? Against those long odds, however, your finger might land in the few small verses Tom read with us just now. Because right in the very middle, 6th chapter chorus of lament, are these few isolated verses about God's steadfast love, God's mercies, God's faithfulness. These were also shared in our call to worship, which you'll find in the bulletin. This cluster of hopeful, hope-filled sayings seems terribly out of context, like a patch of blue in Picasso's grayscale painting of Guernica. Where do these strange words come from? How do they possibly fit in with a book that is saturated with the language of loss? We traditionally assign this book to a singular voice, that of the prophet Jeremiah. But in actuality, this is a group project, a plurality of voices, a whole defeated community joining together in its own requiem. Voices join in, alternate, drop out, come back in over these 6 chapters to tell the story of the Babylonian conquest and where it has left these people. The immense grief of a nation rent asunder is recited in turn by members of the entire community. Sorrow in tandem. In the midst of that low and mournful dirge, this improbable series of high notes appear, beginning this way. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. The word translated there as steadfast love is chesed in Hebrew, one of the most cherished words in the whole of the Old Testament. Chesed can also mean loving kindness, mercy, goodness. It encompasses all of those things at once. Here's what I find remarkable. In this instance, chesed is spoken in the plural, a reference to actual deeds that reveal God's unceasing care for us. This is hope for a way through an awful tragedy, born of the countless expressions of God's agency in history, not some concept of a characteristic of God, specific instances of God's chesed, one after another, and also anticipating God's presence and power and chesed, loving kindness, steadfast loves in the future. Verse 22 might better be read this way: God's steadfast acts of love, one after another, tangible, measurable, real, these have never ceased and never will. The second half of the verse, what we sometimes call its parallel line, is something of an echo of the first half. It reads, God's mercies never come to an end. Basically, the same message phrased a different way with different vocabulary. In this instance, the word used here for mercy is also intriguing because it comes from the Hebrew word for womb. As if to say, never ending is God's mothering work of birthing the world, birthing creation, birthing each one of us into newness of life. It will be 7 centuries before we overhear Jesus say to Nicodemus in John's Gospel, you must be born from above. But it's a similar message. Imagine yourself for a moment in a narrow place, a difficult place, a dark and discouraging place, living off of these pages of Lamentations, grayscale from the day's beginning to its end, throughout the season, perhaps. Maybe you don't have to imagine that at all. That may be where you are right now. It's certainly where most of us, all of us, have been this past year. Now imagine God as a midwifing presence, drawing you out from that heaviness, that darkness, into new being. Dale alla luce, as the Italians speak of childbirth, giving us over to the light. John O'Donohue once wrote that the human heart is never completely born. Maybe this is what he meant. The divine gift to each of us is the capacity to mend, to heal, to move again and again beyond despair, heartache, loss, lament, and to know joy and love and hope as before, or maybe as never before. The next phrase in this patch of blue echoes the same assurance: new mercies every morning. New mercies presented new, for every season, every circumstance, every situation in life, every occurrence in history, as if tailor-made to meet that specific need, historical or personal. Every peculiar grief, every possible anguish or sadness we could know, as the fresh new dawn followed every tired night, every old and worn out darkness, so new mercy greets and meets us in our old hurts, our tired need, and leads us into the sunlight of a brand new day. Like this one. I like Ellen Fargen's word. We sang it earlier this morning in our opening hymn. God's recreation of the new day. Life remade, refashioned for just this moment, this time, this community, ours, for this your heart and also mine. You and I have been through some things together. In this tumultuous experience of a pandemic and so much besides, and we've been left unsure regarding what we've gained, what we've lost, what we've learned, what it cost. Unsure of what comes next for us, for our nation, for our world. We've had our own chorus of lament, of loss, sadness, grief, but we've also been given this over and over and over, a host of reminders of the steadfast loves of God that never cease, mercies that meet us in fresh, new, birthing ways in every strange and different and surprising circumstance of our lives. Hope, it seems, is not really a function of size, certainly not in the Book of Lamentations, where it's a miniature message, not a function of size or scope or heft or muscle. Hope is a function of frequency, of plurality, hearing over and over, praying over and over, sharing with others over and over and over, and seeking to trust ourselves over and over, the assurances, the promises, the goodnesses, the mercies. Hope is plural, a simple practice of what we know and hope to believe, shared with our own ears and heart, and then with others too, and then again and again. 2 or 3 years ago, I was traveling by plane when, before takeoff, we became stuck on the tarmac. This has never happened to any of you, has it? We became stuck on the tarmac for quite an extended period of time waiting for clearance. And as you would guess, after a few minutes of what had been pleasant chatter, the mood shifted, right? And suddenly there was this fuselage full of frustrated, fussy, grumbling grown-ups. We'd bought a ticket to ride in a flying plane, not to sit in a parked plane. The frustration was palpable. Suddenly, near the front of the cabin, a toddler poked her head up. Standing backward in her mother's lap, she looked back through the cabin, looked at all of us. And when she had taken in that sight, she looked up and discovered something more interesting. Those little buttons just above her on the ceiling. She reached toward them with her little finger, and stretching up, she pressed one, and light. And An instant later, more light. The light of this child's fascinated face at what she'd just done. And then she reached up and pressed the button again, and the light went off, but this light, more fascination. She reached up again, on, off, on, off. The wonder, the discovery, the fascination, the delight, off, on, off, on. As she repeated this simple gesture over and over, the passengers behind her and some in front craning their necks started to notice this, started watching this young child take delight in creating light. We began to hear a shift in the mood from the grumbling of those grown-ups to, oh, isn't she sweet? The mood shifted. Cranky faces turned kind, softened, relaxed a bit. Do you think her pressing that button on and off, did anything at all to move us down the tarmac to our destination? I don't either. What it did seem to move from one place to another was our attitude. As though with her simple gesture repeated over and over, that small child brought us out of our small selves by reminding us that there are good things around us far more precious and enduring and important than the bad things of the moment that we feel stuck with at the present time. On a plane full of grumbling grown-ups, the odds heavily favored the grumblers. And yet, I don't understand this math. Call it the arithmetic of grace. We were clearly outnumbered by a single curious child. Like a book filled with the deep sadness of a community, the sorrow, the sighing, the asking, how? And in the middle of that sea of sorrow, seeking to assuage that immense grief, a little boat of hope floats. A few brief plural words, steadfast loves, new births, new mercies with all the new mornings, including this one. In a world full of grumblers, in a time of deep lament, any one of us could take up those few verses, memorize them, carry them in here, share them where asked. Any one of us could be that child bringing hope again and again and again against all the odds. It's this simple. It's this simple. Raise your finger. Point it upward as if to say, remember the goodnesses, the steadfast loves, the mercies, the things that are more precious and enduring than anything in the moment we're given. Point that finger upward and then repeat. I think this would help to get us ready for that. Practice in front of a mirror.